Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Daniel Baker. Joining us today, we have Sandy Knight. Sandy, with a wealth of experience as the Senior Vice President and Director of Compliance and Fair and Responsible Banking at First National Bank, Texas, brings a comprehensive understanding of both branch and back office operations within the banking sector. Her journey commenced as an assistant branch manager at Citibank, gradually propelling her career evolution into the roles of BSA officer and loan assistant in 2009. Having dedicated valuable years in Bryan, Texas, Sandy's professional path subsequently directed her to the Waco region, where she seamlessly transitioned into her role as a Steadfast BSA officer. Simultaneously, she embraced the opportunity to expand her expertise by embracing additional responsibilities as a proficient client compliance specialist. Sandy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Daniel. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm really excited to have you join us for our show today. You've got some great experiences that I'd love to chat about. Before we get into that, I always like to ask, Sandy, how did you get started in the financial sector? What was it that got you started in this interesting industry?
Well, actually, before I was an assistant branch manager, I actually started as a teller in our local town, a town of about 3,000. I graduated with less than 100, and I received a scholarship from our local bank. And so I figured they must know me, so I went down and applied, and I got the teller position, and that's what started my career in banking. So I started, you know, at the very entry level for being in a branch. So
I'm assuming this was a small bank, or was this a mid-sized or large bank?
It was a small bank, you know, one branch in our small town. And then we actually got acquired by a national bank, but actually is only centrally located here in Texas. And at that time, they kind of bought up a few First Nationals of various small towns. And so we were able to kind of go through that, or I was able to go through that just as a teller and seeing kind of what all does that mean, answering the customer's questions, you know. And this was also at the time when debit cards weren't readily available as our cell phones. And so the questions were more along the lines of, you know, what's going to happen to my check stock? And nowadays people don't really use checks. They're worried about, is my debit card going to work?
Yeah.
And so from there, it began my curiousness and my, I guess, passion to begin to understand the why of things. And so from there, I was able to get a position within our proof operations department. And that was before, again, Check 21 and everything went to electronic processing. And it helped me kind of see the back operations of things. And I like to say it as putting the puzzle pieces together. And I think ultimately that's what led to my passion today about compliance, is I like to know the why, because if I can understand the why, I can help someone else understand it. And most of the time when you're giving a reason, that associate is more likely to kind of put their guard down and put on their understanding hats rather than the defensive hat of, I don't want to have to do this. And, you know, for the most part, I don't want to have to make them do it or have to, you know, advise them to do it. But again, a long-winded answer to say that, you know, started in a small town and then from there grew, went to proof operations. I was even able to do a little bit of underwriting for consumer loans. And then transitioned to that assistant branch manager position while I was in college. And then ultimately moved down to College Station, where my first real big exposure to compliance through the use of BSA and through the lens of BSA, that really ignited the fire in me to love what I do and love what I do for the banking industry. So,
yeah, that makes complete sense. So what were you doing your undergrad in?
Initially I wanted to start college and be a dental hygienist, but I have a phobic of needles and I faint, so that wasn't going to work. So I liked golf, and so I figured, you know, why don't I just do business? And I thought for the longest time I may want to pursue a loan officer position and get to go golf with clients, but ultimately I ended up where I am today. And so I got my undergrad in general business.
You know, I'd like to pretend that I go golfing all the time, but it always just seems to never quite hit the schedule the way you want it to.
No, I didn't say I was good, but I can swing the club and hit the ball, which is nice, you know.
Hey, that's perfectly acceptable to me. So then I'm curious then, because you did your undergrad in business, right? And then after that, as if I understand correctly, you actually went on to do an executive program in banking and financial institutions at Sam Houston State University. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
What did that program look like?
So the executive MBA in banking and financial institutions at Sam Houston is a true MBA degree. So you do obtain your MBA if you're able to successfully complete the program. It's a 2-year program with Sam Houston. They do have a banking and financial institutions division program area. And so at Sam Houston, that's actually where the Texas Bankers Hall of Fame is as well, within the business building. Okay. And so it's 36 hours, again, over a 2-year period. And each fall, there's a new cohort that starts. And so I was able to join the program in the fall of 21 and then recently graduated at the beginning of this month in August of 23. And there were 4 of us in the program. During that time, Jill Vaughn was able to take over as the chair of the program. Mm-hmm. And so she's a huge advocate for the program and the industry. She has just a wealth of knowledge, and her excitement and her passion for banking and for students to be successful, not only at Sam Houston in the undergrad program, but also in this program in particular, you know, it just shines in everything that she does, whether it's a post on LinkedIn or she's giving a lecture or she's speaking to the students as they're on campus. Mm-hmm. During my cohort, we were still in the period where you had to be on campus for 2 weeks at the beginning of each year in Huntsville. This year, they have changed it to where you are on campus. I believe it's just a week in the fall. Well, I should say August, because it is still hot. So it's cold in the building, but not outside.
Not much. You get the 1 week of fall, Texas, right?
And I believe that they may have 1 or 2 days that they visit in the winter, springtime in the second semester. And so when you're there on campus, you get to meet the professors that will be helping you and that will be teaching you throughout the course. You do year one and then you do year two. And then you complete 2 courses at a time. So each year you have 6 courses. So it's 12 courses in total, and you complete 2 at a time. And there is a lot of individual work, but then there's also a lot of group work. Mm-hmm. My class in particular, you know, we had quite a diverse as far as career background. Myself being a compliance officer, we had an individual from a credit union who had recently moved from the branch environment to training and development. And then we had an OCC examiner. And then we also had a senior vice president for small business lending at his institution. And so it made conversations very interesting. And I find that time on campus, although it was felt like a long time, it was very beneficial, because those conversations that we had, you don't necessarily get that opportunity when you're solely online. And I think that's one of the benefits of going through the Sam Houston program. And, you know,
it's the hybrid, right?
I'm sorry, Dean. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so the program's a hybrid, right, between online and in person. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes. And the professors are great. Ladies, the administrators who help with the program, Pam and Jacqueline, they are phenomenal, and they make sure that we're all taken care of. And it's a really good time. It's tough, but it's very rewarding when you finally finish, and it was worth all the sleepless nights. I don't think any of us regret it at all.
So let me jump in then really quick. Because, I mean, we have listeners that obviously aren't just here in Texas. What's the benefit of doing something like this program? Like what were you actually learning? Like, was it just a standard MBA where you're learning primarily more about like business strategies and business functions and projects like that? Or was this, I mean, it sounds like it was centered on banking financial institutions. What actually were you digging into? What were you learning about?
So our first year, I'd say the number one benefit is if you work in the banking industry, you get not only a MBA, but you do get to have a targeted focus into banking and financial institutions. So if you are looking to continue to grow and to develop, I think that this is the program for you rather than just getting a general MBA. The first year was heavy on, I would say, finance. We had an accounting course. We had a statistics course. We also were able to participate in, you know, cash flow statements, looking at the time value of money. It made us really look at things from a global standpoint. I would equate it to someone who has never been in banking and they have been selected to be on the board of a bank and they have to show up and look at all these reports
and understand
and try and figure it out. And if you've never been in banking, you've never been in business, you know, it could be extremely overwhelming, but the benefit of the coursework is you're understanding what a financial statement is, and then you understand how does this apply to our banking industry. When we go and do a credit risk analysis, how is this going to apply to the loan application in front of us? Or if we do a loan review, how would we risk rate this loan? Or again, looking into strategic planning, or even ERM planning, enterprise risk management, looking at what are the areas of risk that we are assessed on as a bank? How is this going to impact our liquidity? And so with that, moving into year two, we were able to go through courses on project management, looking at commercial lending. We also had a course on capital markets and securities. And initially, when I went into this course, I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be so far over my head. I'm never going to be in investments. It's not going to apply to me. And wow, I was blown away, first of all, at our time on campus. You kind of become an Excel guru, and I'm kind of holding that real close to my chest. Having Excel skills really benefit anyone that I think works in banking. And so from there, we then applied it to, you know, hedging our investments. And what does that mean to the bottom line? How does that impact the bank's balance sheet and the income statement? And Dr. Funk, she was a fantastic professor. But what was so interesting is as our course was ending, I believe it ended at the end of March, Silicon Valley Bank failed, you know, about mid-March, about that last week. And we had just completed a case, some work on bank runs. And when you talk about bank runs in the context of the curriculum, it did not take into account Twitter, and it didn't take into account the faster movement of money. And it was so interesting because our final project in that class was to take one of the bank failures, whether it was Signature Bank or SVB, and kind of dive deep into it a little bit more. And was there was there anything that could have been viewed? And then, of course, from my nerd side, my passion side, I then went looked at the, you know, the Fed's report, which I'm sure most every banker did, because I found it very interesting. And for me to be able to connect those dots and again, figure out the why and how does this puzzle piece fit in here? What could have been done? It enabled me to be a little bit more a little bit more able to speak on the matter. Should someone ask me about it, you know, with my staff, I try to, when we meet every 2 weeks, I try to talk about, I call it the compliance connection, you know, what is going on and how can we apply it in our role? What does this mean? Just like we do with enforcement actions, you know, and we looked at, what does the collapse of SVB mean? How does that equate to our roles? What does that mean for us personally and professionally? And so it just kind of helped kick off, I guess, the conversations. And that was interesting for me, again, from the nerd side, my hat that I wear proudly, just because I like to know the why. I like to understand
it. Yeah, it makes sense.
If I don't, I can't advocate for banking.
I appreciate you sharing those experiences with us. I mean, I've always been curious about the executive programs. I think those programs can have a lot of benefit, and it sounds like you really benefited from the one that you participated in. Yeah. So I'm going to transition a little bit. One of the topics we had discussed prior to the recording today was how to balance the bulletins from the regulators. I mean, we're in an environment today where there's bulletins. they're going to come out. You're going to see them. You're going to be impacted by them. Would you mind giving me just a brief overview of what it is we're even talking about? So what is a bulletin? And then, like, how does it affect the bank? And how can we really balance these things?
So historically, the regulators, whether it's the Fed, FDIC, or OCC, or even CFPB, would publish regulatory guidance. This is basically a look into how they're going to examine you in whatever area it may be. The FDIC would issue it through an FIL, OCC issues it through a bulletin, CFPB could issue it through guidance. And so through that, as a compliance officer, we monitor all the regulators. And so I have news updates of anything that is coming out from the regulator, not only because we have interagency rulemakings or guidance or new examination handbooks, but also because the tone of one may set the tone of others.
Sounds like the market.
Yeah. Yes. More recently, the tone of CFPB is really shifting the tone, in my opinion, of the different regulators. And so for us to be a proactive compliance department, I follow all on social media, primarily on Twitter, because I found that there have been some tweets where it could be a precursor to guidance that's coming out or a news clip, or it could be following one of those publications, and it gives a little bit more insight into the why, again, the why or the intent. And so taking that into account when reading those items to see how is this going to impact the bank, what products or services may it impact, is it going to impact our deposit side of the house or the lending side, to make sure that we have everything we need should this need to change part of our reviews or our operations. And then we can take that and give a scaled down analysis or summary, you know, to our executive team so they know how to proceed with it. Because ultimately we are here to advise and support all of our business units for things that come out this way. As far as keeping up, I can't keep up real time as far as the tweets that come out, but I do a daily scroll. You know, I'm looking into it. The emails that come through, most all of us get it. We have a very involved team here, and so we're all looking at that. Services like Compliance Alliance and then our trade associations, they also send out recaps and summary recaps, and so that helps us also, because I may read something and interpret it one way, but hearing what our trade association or like Compliance Alliance is stating on the recent release, that helps me be better informed so that I can help our business units here and the management team.
So really it's just about making sure that you're on top of the changes, you know the information that's coming out, the expectations of the regulators. So really is that you can yeah. So then something that goes hand in hand with that is you have compliance officers that work under you, right? That you work with. So how do you help them adapt to these changes? I mean, there's been a lot of big changes over the past few years, right? And some really big ones, some maybe not so big ones. How do you help your compliance officers really adapt to this changing market?
Well, the biggest thing for me is helping them adapt is to do it with them. And so no one is ever out on their own on the island trying to figure out how to swim back, you know, to the main island. We go into it together. We kind of have a template of how are we going to handle this regulatory change. It goes through all the considerations from systems to business units to policies to procedures to help us identify what may be impacted and then who we need to get with to do a follow-up. To me, I more so go along the lines of having more than is needed and then scale it down to what we've identified that actually is impacted. Because we do our best to think of it all, but we aren't perfect. And then also allowing the grace of you're going to make a mistake, and that's totally fine. I make mistakes every single day, sometimes hourly. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just how it is.
Part of being human, right?
Yeah, we're all human. And, you know, as long as we're giving our good faith effort and our best effort before we jump into a regulatory change, that's what I'm asking of the team. We also take the time to look at it together and what we identify is going to be the impact before we get other business units involved, because mm-hmm. we don't want to be giving out mixed messages, because when that happens, you're spending more time fixing the misunderstanding rather right. than focusing on what our end goal is.
Comprehensive, clear communication.
Yeah. So it's kind of like our own mini project, mm-hmm. although it can be huge depending on what the change is, but it's really getting in there with the team and helping them feel comfortable about, you do know this backwards and forwards. Let's get into it. And then we're also attending the trainings that are coming out about a new regulation. I remember with TRID, it was huge. We had to impact our biggest mm-hmm. business units for mortgages, and knowing that things were changing. I mean, we were up to a week before it was going to go live, and the Bureau extended it 60 days. I mean, it was crazy, but that's just kind of how compliance works. And again, yep. at the end of the day, doing it with them and giving grace, and then also knowing that at the end, our goal is going to be achieved. We're going to get there. It may be rough, but we're going to get there, and we're going to feel proud of the work that we put into
it. I really like that. I really do. Well, Sandy, unfortunately, we are running out of time. I'd love to continue our conversation. But before you go, I do want to ask one last question. And I ask this of pretty much all of my guests. If you could give one piece of advice to the banking industry today, small banks, medium banks, large banks, what have you, what piece of advice would you give?
I think the piece of advice that I would give is appreciate the business units for the functions that they serve. Because each role in each business unit, each function is there for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I am a firm believer in teamwork makes the dream work. I know that not one person can do it all. And so by relying on our teammates and our counterparts, it really does help us get to a better position as a whole. And so I would say just, you know, really have an appreciation for that function, because one day or another, you're going to need each other, whether it's
for sure.
IT or marketing, you know, we all are in this fight together. And when I say fight, you know, banks do get kind of the bad headlines from, you know, Wall Street. And mm-hmm. so reminding everyone we are here to serve, not only internally, but externally. And so I find that to be what I would say to someone.
No, I like that, and I appreciate that. That's actually the first time we've heard the importance of making sure that the individual units. I really do like that, Sandy. Thank you. Well, Sandy, as I said, unfortunately, we are out of time. Thank you very much for joining us for today's episode.
Thank you.
For the rest of you listening in, that's Banking Matters.